for just about everything for the outdoors. Go to MidwayUSA.com.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
On today's episode of Blue Collar Elk Hunting, we are live from our Elk Bros Elk Adventure Camp right here in beautiful New Mexico. You're going to have the opportunity to hear from folks just like yourself that are going through the paces, making the mistakes, learning the skill sets, finding out what it is to truly be an elk hunter. You're going to hear the things that they like, the things that they dislike, the issues, the problems, the solutions, and you're going to hear from all of us about those things as well. Now, I will tell you this. We are live. We're at elk camp. There's a heck of a wind, so there's going to be times when things sound just a little bit windy on that microphone. But we did the best we could, and we want you to enjoy the show and enjoy the things that you're going to learn from those folks learning just like you. So here we go. Burning daylight.
Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting, brought to you by ElkGrows.com. With your host, Gilbert Ornelas, and elk hunting coach, Joe Gilley. You want to hunt elk? They live to hunt elk. Their goal is to share with you what they have learned grinding it out for over 35 seasons, doing what they love. So come on into camp and set a spell. Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunters.
Welcome, everybody, to Elk Bros Adventure Camp 2023. I'm Big O, the host of your show, coming to you from a beautiful spot here in New Mexico. And my brother right here, Luis Gonzalez, has got a surprise for everybody. And he shows his face. Look at that awesome decoy that was provided from our main man, Guy DePlanche. I'd like to introduce everybody as we go around the table. We got the Venezuelan Mafia in the house. WWJGD is right here and ready to go. We got the Doro Boys from Minnesota, Kevin and Josh. We got the legend in the house, Mr. R.C. Knox, the ninja, Mr. Chad Chavez. Here we go. And I this guy needs a proper introduction, okay? He's been my hunting partner pretty much all week, and this guy's an American hero. His name is Colonel, retired Colonel, Bob Mabry, Dr. Bob Mabry, okay? An American hero, and we love to have you here, Dr. Bob. Thank you so much. We got the big man, Big Red Cody Bosuska is in the house. And that's right, last but not least, one of our Elk Bros coaches in the house, the Colorado Madman, the Colorado Killer, the man with the silver voice. Absolutely. Got Mr. Guy DePlanche. Welcome everybody in the camp.
Woo woo.
Whoop 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 whoop.
Joe had a little hood rat right there.
He did.
Absolutely, man.
It's been a grind, but you know, typical from what our brother Travis O'Shea has daunted the Elk Bros call the grinder. It's been an absolute grinder in New Mexico, hasn't it, Joe?
Yeah, but always, anytime you come to country like this, you're gonna have to work for it, man.
Yeah.
It's big. It's tall in places. You know, when you've got this size of a crew, everybody, I mean, there's a lot that goes into it, but all of this really was about, it's really more than the hunt.
Absolutely.
This is about the journey of these men that were here in camp this week. And our role is a totally different one. We're instead of the hunters, you know, we are now the coaches, we're the mentors. And, you know, we've had a chance to, and we're missing two.
We are. I'd be remiss not to thank Chris Cox and Sean Stevens. They had to leave early. It's Chris's daughter's first birthday, so they couldn't be on the podcast with him. Wish him safe travels, and it was a pleasure to have him in camp.
KK as well.
Kate and Cody, the kid, Kirkpatrick, he's been in camp, and I know he's hunted with the Doros, and he's been hunting with one of our other adventure campers from last year in another undisclosed location in New Mexico. And Mr. Egan, we can't thank Mr. Egan-Zadas enough for, you know, helping us for sure. Big shout out to Ed.
Got a visit from Adam.
Yeah, and got a visit, Joe, from Adam Messner.
Yep.
Our successful hunter from last year who thought elk hunting was so easy, he went and killed him a bull on the first day, and he's had a little bit of that humble pie like we've all had this week, huh, Joe?
Yeah. But, you know, you take a look at it, I don't think there's a person in camp that hasn't had the elk encounter experience, you know. And if I'm right, Bob, you had a bull. How close?
Yeah, about 40 yards probably before he turned around and went back into the woods,
walked out of our lives.
Yeah.
Bull.
Another four steps, he'd have been in the shooting lane. Yeah. But a very, very good sized bull came out right 5 minutes before last light.
Yeah, and when I talked with the Duros, we were taking off when we were going to, that morning, we were going out to hunt. And we got Kevin and Josh. Kevin was the winner of the hunt with the Elk Bros,
he's
had a chance to hunt with different ones of us. And how many days did you guys do in Colorado?
So we scouted a couple days and then hunted 5 days. So we've seen some elk but didn't hear any bugles. So.
Heard no bugles or didn't have an encounter really other than you said that Josh, that
Black
story was, how, tell that story. Come on, Josh.
I can't see you. His microphone's broken.
We got to some lakes after a big hike and we decided we'd go check them out. Saw a little bit of sign, not much. But anyways, you get up this hill and there was a grouse sitting there, so of course you had to throw something at it. And
so this, and look y'all, this is typical, man. This is how elk hunting goes. He throws a rock at a grouse and?
And I missed by, I barely missed it.
Right.
It hit the biggest, most dead tree in the whole woods, echoed, and took a couple steps and nice big elk comes running by.
So that big clump made that bull get up and start moving. Huh? He thought there was another bull in his territory.
So we've been doing it wrong. We've been carrying diaphragm calls and brush tubes.
And you just got to throw rocks at
trees.
Throw
rocks at squirrels. Should have been rocks and generators.
Was the ratchet thing?
The ratchet.
So then to keep on with the story, then we went up a ways, did a little scenario, did some things, hung out for a while. Then Josh thought of KK's story last year with the ratchet, so then he took his pack, snapped his snaps loud, and then the bull came partly back and started raking. So really, we just need loud snaps and ratchet straps.
Loud snaps and ratchet straps. That sounds like a Tony Wintrip song.
Can make a shirt with that.
Yeah, loud snaps and
so that was our first encounter in Colorado, and then we got a glimpse of another one, and we raked that one partially in. And then we jumped the cow later on. But as far as hearing active bugles during daylight, so far Joe's been the one to put us on that.
And actually had a bull coming down. It was a great, really, really cool. But
y'all heard some bulls in camp here.
Yeah, at night there's been a bunch of bugling going on at night and stuff here. So I think it's probably Joe's nose jammer that made the difference.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing
look,
that
only
up.
Yeah.
Thank
talk you. About my nose.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Oh, he would say he said nose jammer.
Nose jammer.
Lower.
Yeah. Pretty foul and dangerous.
Yeah, you
stay
be,
away. Stay upwind from
stay upwind
it. It worked. It worked, man.
Yeah.
RC, it wasn't your cooking, though, man. I just want you to know.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I'll oh definitely gosh. Shout out to RC and Chad for yeah. all the cooking
excellent
they've done.
Food. Excellent.
It's been excellent food. We've not gone a minute hungry here at Elk Bros Adventures Camp, for sure. I know Joe's, you know, leading into the content here about what we do at Elk Bros Adventures. And it's coach, man. It's different. It's a different model altogether. And some guys have really flourished in this model. Even the two guys that are missing, their calling grew so much. I know a guy got to hunt with Chris and Sean, and I got to hunt with Chris a couple days too. And, you know, when they first got here, the calling part was rough.
So
you know?
The calling part was rough for everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that is and that's what I want to ask you guys about that, because during the whole time, and for you guys that are listening to this and don't know about Elk Bros Adventures Camp, it is actually, we have people that have purchased a hunt to be coached on elk hunting. And what we do is we mentor them, we coach them, all different parts of our Elk Bros Success Squad in all different areas. Whether it's calling, whether it's gear, whether it's archery setup, failure points, physical fitness, all of these areas, and which was kind of cool too, because Chab did physical fitness, and I'm always asking Chab, well, have you checked on anybody? He says, look, dude, Mabry, I don't have to worry about, man.
He's like, he's a horse.
He's got it going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, and we'll talk about that a little bit, you know.
That injury bug seems to crop up for somebody every year, Joe.
Yeah, it happens. But so we do months of preparation. They get the academy, so they can go through that. And then it's boots on the ground, and they have an Elk Bros coach with them. And the whole idea is we are not guides. We are teachers. We are coaches. And what we our directive is to empower, okay? And y'all, it's going to be a little windy. I know you're listening to this. It's going to get a little windy here, so we're out in the woods. But it's to empower these people, not enable. And so anytime we do something, our goal is to share our knowledge and to share those strategies and the different systems that we use. And for that to be passed on to them. Woo. So we as coaches have to ask ourselves all the time, is their skill set being developed? What are they learning out of this? And really the success in this camp, and Luis came to me the other day, and he's like, Joe, man, he says, like, I just don't feel like we're successful unless somebody gets an elk, right? I think, you know, gosh, Sean, I don't know how many elk Sean had in front of him, right?
Yeah.
And I think like Doc was probably 6 feet away from a dead elk.
Yeah.
You know, I think that with different circumstances, I think Kevin was probably 15 seconds away from it. And I think other people have been in those positions.
Yeah.
So if one thing that I told him, though, is that, look, the kill in this situation is icing on the cake. If we have any of our guys that are at this point in their skill set, if they raise up that much in their skill set, that's a success.
For sure.
Right? Each one of these guys here are freshmen in their elk hunting journey, as far as I'm, like, if I connected to an athlete. Oh, and I forgot to mention, too, you know, Cody.
Yeah.
We had a beautiful bull, man, in 40 yards and through thick stuff, and then he stops at 60. And Cody, that wasn't his shot, didn't think of pulling back. And let that pass. And
that's huge growth.
Yes.
Most guys will be excited, draw, and let it go and not care what happens. And, we applaud you for that, brother.
It takes a level of maturity in your hunting career to know when to pass.
And this is a guy dropping dimes at 70 yards. I mean, you're talking maybe a 2-inch group at 70 yards.
Yeah.
to make that decision. So that's a big deal.
Yeah, and back to the comment I made to Joe, I mean, it's just more of around adapting to the mentality of coaching and given the gift of the experience versus, you know, the killing, you know. And it's just, you know, we as hunters, sometimes we tend to relate the success to actually the harvest.
The harvest, yeah.
But that's the switch that me as a coach and all of us as coaches here at camp need to flip and say, we're not guiding. We're not here for the harvest. We're here for the experience and for watching, like you said, the skill set grow.
To help you guys be able to go out and do this on your own, you know, and your skill set grow, right? And if we've not done that, then we have not done a good enough job, right? But I've watched every one of you grow with your skill set. One of the beautiful things I thought we did at this camp, we did a little bit at the other camp, but we did a lot more of it here, was afternoon coaching sessions.
Oh, yeah.
With you guys, and especially on the calling part, because if there's a weaker point on with everybody, it's on the calling part. You know, I talked to Doc this morning. We had a really good hunt. He led us. He, you know, I would do a little bit, but he started getting into the cow calling a lot better. His bugles are absolutely powerful. I mean, it'll blow the roof off the joint, right? But his cow calling needed some work, and he's really worked hard at that. You know, we even did some tutorial stuff with him drawing and cow calling with me videoing him so he could mimic stopping a bull when he needed to if I was pulled off of him. A lot of these situations that we come to with partner hunting is we may not have eyes on our shooter. We may need to be behind him, you know. So I wanted him to feel comfortable with the things that he was going to need to be doing to be successful. And he's been, you know, like I say, he's been a model guy to have in camp, to have to coach, right? And with a guy of that ilk, it's hard to coach, right? Because you feel
intimidated.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Right? A little bit. Yeah, my skill set allows me to help him. But again, man, this guy is the real deal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well,
I hear that.
On the calling though, Gil, I gotta say, so it's one thing to go through the classes and go through the coaching and so, okay, here's a cow call, here's a lost calf call, here's a bugle. It's way more to it than that.
Yes, sir.
And that's just like the basic sounds of the elk language.
Yes, sir.
And watching the coaches and how they put the scenarios together, that's an eye-opener. So there's a lot more work to be done with the calling to be able to get that to that level of sophistication, to be able to sound like a herd of cows, to be able to sound like a hot cow, to be able to sound like a, you know, bulls in different sets of circumstances. The repertoire that you guys have is pretty staggering, and it's going to take a lot of work to be able to kind of to get there.
Yes, sir. Well, I appreciate that. And like I said, when you're coaching guys that have skill sets like his in the woods, there I've not hunted with many guys that have a better skill set than he does in the woods, right? I mean, this guy's an absolute assassin in the woods. So again, for me, it was just really honing in on what he needed to work on, and
as
it was the calling part as an elk hunter, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's you know, Cody is here, and I know they're not here, but you take Chris and Sean, for example, man.
Grew huge, man. Guys, I mean, couldn't even make a sound when they got here.
Bro, you had them out yesterday and today where they were actually running their scenarios,
they made
right?
the decisions, right? And that was the goal, right? I said, hey, let me take both the guys out. They're going to partner hunt, you know, in the upcoming years. It doesn't make sense for them not to put these scenarios on together, for them not to make the decisions together, and then prep them for their next elk hunt together, right? So when they go in the woods, they're prepared. And there is that portion that, you know, some of these guys that didn't get to do that have to figure out on their own. But it was hugely beneficial. And one of the best things was, I'm not calling, boys. You're responsible for him.
Right.
And you're responsible for him.
Yeah.
And them dudes come back to camp that day, and all I heard over there was mew, 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 buzz, 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 right? And we went out to the woods after that, and it was perfection, man. I'm going to set up here. He's going to set up here. Why? Because X, Y, Z, A, B, C, and it was beautiful, man.
Well, I know on day one, and a lot of this is about conversations that we're having as coaches too. But we had the ability for all of us, for two people to spike out. And Guy and myself, we went with Cody and Doc out there, and it ended up, we were in animals and we got split, and Doc ended up, you guys were going to come back after the first night because the next morning you had an injury.
Right? No, we came back because Doc needed some serious call work, and I didn't want to do that in the field.
But he got injured on the way back.
So we came back to work on calls, and as he found out, and he just said, right, that, and you've been saying it, you know, leading up to camp, that that is going to be your fail point, if nothing else. So we came back to camp for that.
And see, that's what I want to, that's where I want, and I want to get some feedback from both you guys, from you, Doc, and you, Cody, on, you know, I talked a lot, and I tried to message and really emphasize the whole calling thing. And where were you guys with that? And, like, in all of your preparation, where did that fall? And how did that change when you get here? And I think you just said a little bit about that, how that is, you know, because you don't really see the pieces put together until it's actual, right?
I mean, making a cow sound or a lost calf sound or a bugle is way different than running the scenario.
Yeah.
And, like, having the knowledge of, like, when to pull out those different tools and how to put those together in a way that makes an effective scenario, that's kind of graduate-level stuff. I mean, making the calls is not... I mean, it's challenging when you first learn how to do it, but that's just the entry point to where you need to be. I don't think that's being able to bugle and cow call by itself is not by itself, I think, sufficient for what you need out here.
Where was your calling on your priority list of the things that you were prepping for?
It was right up there with fitness and marksmanship.
Okay, cool.
You know, kind of those were my three top priorities.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the weakest link I knew coming into camp.
Okay. Do you feel like it's the weakest link now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Do you feel like you've had growth there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what I need to work on for next year, for sure.
If you came in as a 1 and a 1 to a 5, where are you at now?
Oh, I'm not anywhere close to putting the level of sophistication into scenarios that you guys are.
Uh-huh.
But, maybe a 3.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Gross. Solid growth.
That's
awesome.
Success right there.
That's solid growth.
And I can attest to that. I've listened to him for several days, and I can attest to that. He led us this morning. He led the... He pretty much led everywhere we went. He was real mindful about where we were going. I think that's another thing we'll touch on is how you guys use your electronics to control boundaries and stuff. It's important. We're hunting on some semi-private and national forest lands, right. So we need to know where we're at most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you've always got... private lands that you got to know where they exist. Sometimes
that.
The fences don't always exist out there. But so Cody, in this show, because we're doing Elk Grove's Adventures, I need to hear from the campers. We need to hear from the campers because there's a few areas like we're going to come back as to what the expectation to the reality was, what you thought you were getting into and what actually, how that was different and stuff. So think about that a little bit. But let's talk about the calling with you, man, because you and I got to spend some cool time together out on the hill. We had one night when we got rained on like crazy.
Rain.
It dropped down in temperature. We had a real cold night one night. But it was a great time out there. And we got some cool time to work on the call-in, huh?
Yeah, it was a good opportunity. Coming into this, you were talking about priority of calling, and before I entered camp, I thought my calls were pretty good, but I got a big slice of humble pie when I got here. Like, oh, I guess it doesn't sound that good. It only sounded good to me, but... So I had to work on a lot of things there, and working side by side and hearing those calls from the coaches and having their critiques as I'm doing the calls really helped develop the sound and the depth of those calls. And then seeing the different lengths and variations and so much more and being right there and trying them, having the coach do the call and then being able to try to copy that call.
Yeah.
And I believe you said I'm a better bugler than you.
Yeah.
didn't even know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're going to try to get somebody to do something where they're, you know, you got to help their confidence.
Mic down.
<know? laughs>
edit point number one.
And when you were doing that, because you said you thought your calls sounded pretty good. So for the people that were out there, what would you say was, let's take one at a time. Let's take your bugling, all right? What did you find was your problem, and how did you change that? What did we do to be able to?
Yeah, so I could make a bugle before I came to camp that I thought sounded pretty good, and I don't think it was horrible, but the way I was doing it was taking extra energy and air and causing it so I couldn't bury it at the end, and basically, and then my timing on the different sounds of the bugle weren't really lining up. So I think those are the two things that improved the most. And air control was what really helped me with that. So before I was forcing the sounds that I needed to, rather than finessing the sounds. And I believe the pressure of the tongue on the latex of the call is what really changed my bugle.
Yeah.
That was a big commonality. I saw Bob do it. I saw Chris do it. Sean, not so much. Cody was doing it, and it's this big load to the lungs
instead of the
and
diaphragm.
Hold the breath. Big, even on the cow call.
Yeah.
And then you watch him come
pass
off.
Out.
Yeah, you watch him come off of just some using shirts.
Yeah.
And
it's the breathing.
Right? So much effort, right? And that was a huge commonality across the board. And Bob's a big man.
Yeah.
Right? Big strong man with big strong lungs. And he grabbed that bugle and hit that bugle. I thought he was going to blow the end off that SOB.
I'm telling you, man. I tell him every day, hit me with one of them big boy, big bad boy bugles, Bob.
When he got that under control?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
That's a good bugle.
It's powerful.
I bet you could put a ping pong ball inside that tube.
I think he throws
it out
of there.
And launch that thing like 40 feet.
Like a, you know? Like a daggum, what do you call it?
This guy was...
Yeah.
Well, but it's a hard skill to learn watching... You know, videos online, and then with an app. I mean, and having one-on-one coaching on how to actually do that and work with your individual idiosyncrasies is huge.
Yes.
So it's hard to find someone that does a lot of elk bugling and elk calling in South Texas, you know, to work with one-on-one. And all these video gurus, they all have different techniques. And you know, you end up kind of chasing your tail of like, well, he says to do it this way, and he says to do it a completely different way.
Yeah. Well, where do you...
Go ahead.
Not talking about you guys necessarily. I'm just talking about all the, you know.
Where do you think the emotion falls into it, right? Because I feel like that's one of the things that's lacking. You don't get to pick up emotion when you hear, you know, estrus buzz or cow mew, right? And that emotion coming through those calls is huge. Where do you guys think that falls? You know, as you were listening and watching everything play out.
That's the graduate level calling, which is what I'm talking about. And that's going to be a lot. That's going to be listening to a lot of elk sounds and then kind of thinking through those scenarios in your mind and just mimicking those scenarios. I mean, that's how I'm going to probably approach it this next year.
One of the things we've talked to the guys before they got here was being sure that they're taping themselves and listening to what they sound like versus some of the other callers that are out there. But you're right.
But what Bob said, Chris and Sean said is, I think Cody said it too right now, I thought I sounded good.
Right? But so I don't think many of them tape themselves and listen to it back.
And they did. Okay, so the problem is when you tape yourself and listen to it back.
It's like singing in a shower.
You're hearing yourself.
Everybody's
right?
Mariah Carey.
I sounded good.
Yeah.
You
sound
like singing in a shower.
So I think that was the benefit. Like when Cody and I got to be side by side, I'm like, okay, do yours. All right, now listen to this.
Yeah.
Okay. And then
that helps Sean too.
And instead of just saying do what I did, I'm watching his mechanics.
Right.
And so for example, when he talks about all the effort that goes into a bugle, it's because, and for all you guys listening out there, they're trying to do this. So many, if you're using a low tone, a growl, or any of the bass tones, in order to have that, there's more space between your tongue and the latex, which means more air is passing through. So the longer you stay at low tones, or growling or anything like that, that arrow just it's just flying out. So, and I hear a lot of people that are really on the beginning of the bugle, they're really like, and before they even get there, right? And they're running out of air. And so really, by the time Cody got to the actual high pitch, the thing that the animals need to hear, it was like not even a second long.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just boom and down. Right. And so there were places he had trouble at the front.
Right.
And he had trouble at the end. And the trouble at the end came from running out of air.
Yeah.
So it was like a real sharp, ugh! On the end of it with that sound that sounded like a bark.
Right.
So he was really, and I mean, in order to get sounds, he's got to have a lot of air because I could swear, man, I bet if I put a ping pong ball in there, he could have shot that puppy 40 yards.
Sure.
Could have killed an elk with it. Once we got him to realize that, and most people that are doing this, like if you could see on a scale, right, if you had a scale of 1 to 10, and by the time they got to the high pitch, they would go all the way that slope all the way to 10.
Yeah.
I tried to get him to get that slope at 3.
Right.
Okay. Now he's able to now be at high pitch from 3 to 10,
mm-hmm.
or come down on the end of it, right?
Right.
And he had to learn that tongue control, that it's just relaxing that tongue off of it or pressing that tongue forward into it. And once you got so that you were like right to that high pitch, man, you were like
lights out.
Oh man, and he could call for a long time. In fact, I'd tell bro, that's too long.
Right? Yeah.
You know, at one
3
point.
To 5. Yeah.
What else did you say?
I said, I believe your bugle sounds better than mine.
Was it the one or just across the board?
Well, what was so funny was then, you know, he's feeling all cocky. And so the whole time I'm like, anytime we're calling, we're partners out there. I'm like, bugle. You know, anytime you feel like you want a bugle. And there was one time we thought there would be an animal. And I was like, okay, bugle. And they went,
So for the folks listening, right, when that happens, what do you do? If you send that bad call,
get right after it.
Get right back after
it
with one. Don't
sweep it up.
Like another bull's right there with it.
Yeah.
That one that had a little emphysema or whatever, you know. At the end of the day. I mean, I've heard a couple of cow calls and I've made comments to guys just in laughing at that cow had emphysema or, you know, maybe a bad
bronchitis.
Batch bronchitis because I've got it right now. But at the end of the day, these guys have worked extremely hard. And I would be remiss not to say that we have a new coach in camp that took hunters this week, uh-huh. and I'm very proud of him, Manano. So the guy has come full circle to being one of the best woodsmen I've ever hunted with to now calling his butt off. So we're super proud of you, brother.
Thank you, bro. You
bet. Yeah, and we had, I mean, that was Cody, too,
yep.
you know, for the first time. You know, Cody was actually in guide mode before he got here,
yeah.
Doing Elk Grove's Adventure Guiding,
yeah.
and came in here and jumped in. And
I was with him, and he did it perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did it pretty well.
But at the same time, we had another first-year coach, and that was Luis.
Yeah.
And I'm real curious now that we're on the calling because I heard Guy talking about Sean and Chris this morning.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how Sean was knocking it out of the park.
Yeah.
And you were the first one to work with Sean for a few
days.
Two days, right?
Yeah.
So what were you finding? Talk about his growth.
Yeah. So Sean is extremely smart, and he was a sponge, right? And you can tell
Very
he had a passion
so.
for this type of, you know, sport.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, on top of that, the guy had done Ironman, and he was in really, really good shape. And he wanted to explore. He wanted to eat the mountains alive, you know. And so it was
day
awesome.
Day 3, he wanted to whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we did it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we had, you know, from day one, first morning, we had an encounter, a close encounter. You know, we had a conversation before this happened, and so we made the calls. And one of the things that Sean and I talked about is, you know, he felt like he was, like, so green to the whole process that he didn't feel comfortable kind of just leading the hunt and being just being coached from kind of the background, he kind of more wanted that initial, you know.
He needed an example.
He needed, yes, especially in for the cow calling, for the bugling. He just needed to see it and hear it. More of a visual guy. You know, we talked about setups. We talked about, hey, you know, if the bull's coming this way, what is the first thing you're doing? You know, so prompting those questions every morning before something took place and then saying, okay, well, how about this? Or how about that option? And so he, again, I think he did an excellent job. That close encounter, if it wasn't for the fact that the sun was starting to come out and shun his face, it was like
silhouetted his face,
and I think that's kind of what spooked the elk. But that elk was, you know, within 38 yards and coming towards him.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a super close encounter. The second day, we threw a bugle and I hear a noise on the right hand side of the ridge, and we turn and there's two elk on 100 yards out, and so we set up. You know, we make a call and the elk turn and they start coming uphill. You know, I think the wind was wrong at the moment and they just skirted the little ridge that we were on. So, I mean, I think a lot to say about, you know, and I had this conversation with RC as well, is, you know, sometimes we do the pre-hunt, we do a lot of work on all the theory and all the discussions and preparation to the hunt. And I think that box is being checked excellently. I think that what we want to see is you guys, when you come into camp, kind of leading your own hunt, but having us there as a sounding board, you know, to make your decisions. But depending on the level of the hunter coming in, mm-hmm. I think there's worth in, it's kind of like when a pilot, you know, goes through all the material, but you first put him as a co-pilot on your plane
right.
before taking off and flying with him. And eventually you hand over control and then that person takes over. I think, you know, Sean and I came to that kind of agreement. Everybody's going to be different.
Right.
But Sean and I came to that agreement. And again, I think what he saw and what he did the first couple of days just, you know, catapulted him to a level that I feel that he grew a lot in the first few days, just because he's,
you can see it in his eyes.
Yes.
I mean, when we would do, and it was so cool. I want to do this first of all too, and say that I could not be any more proud of my entire Elk Bros crew. Chav, RC, Guy, Gil, the Mafia, KK, you know, everybody that, I come back, you know, and I see coaching sessions going on, and I just got to tell you, man, it just made me really, really proud, you know, to see that happening, to see that level of commitment. And look, you know, it's coaching sometimes is a lot like parenting. You know, when you're doing something like, there is no book, we're creating the book,
yeah.
right?
And,
you know, there's some mistakes that are going to be made along the way, but none of it with in malice, all of it for wanting to do the best for people. So, and that's one thing that, you know, guys, that when we talk about that knowledge set, and we talked about that, it's like, well, we can't just tell guys, okay, run the hunt
right.
without any kind of knowledge to be able to do that, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, even though we've been given information, how to put those pieces together with all the variables that are happening out there with terrain and weather and how the elk behavior is and the different things like that. So we work on giving knowledge options for you to think about so that you can get involved in that. And yeah. so that's one of the things that we use as a tool.
One of our objective coaches here, and I mean, he's been like a fly on the wall, listening to everything, who I've hunted with for many years, and you, I'd like to hear from him. But Chav, you've seen these coaching sessions, have sat in on them, and offered some fantastic advice. So really like to hear some.
Yeah, Joe almost got to the point that I was wanting to make. When you guys set up that coaching session, the three of you,
yes, sir.
I thought that was real important, because I could see growth from day one to day three. you know, the first day, you know, we're back here hop singing and Mr. Cartwright, you know, they're out there cooking and I'm hearing them starting off and I'm like, and I look over and see what RC's doing. but by the third day, I'm looking around the tent like,
oh,
wow,
who was that?
Who was that? Yeah. I mean, I could see the growth. I mean, I thought that was really important.
Thank you.
You guys did a really good job teaching.
Yeah, I think it
but
helps it,
then again, you got to be coachable, and yes. I thought you guys were doing
that's
a good job.
That's what I was
going
to say. Yeah. It takes a willingness on their part to really keep
right.
us motivated, right? Because it's, you know.
And I thought that was really great. I could see the improvement. Really see it.
Yeah. No, I was in RC. I mean, you're always like on my shoulder a little bit, kind of telling me here and there and stuff like that. And because RC is one of our coaches as well, with a lot of experience. And I tell you, but he helps us out by. I mean, what we have here at camp is because of that guy's dedication. And,
yes.
And but. What did you see? What were your observations that you made?
I thought it was very fun that, you know, we're cooks, but yet when these guys sat down with these guys, there was a moment or two that I thought, well, I could step in and be a coach and say, okay, you need to take the diaphragm out of your mouth and just growl, because he couldn't growl.
Yeah.
He didn't know how to growl, and so he took it out. And he actually was growling in his grunt tube, and he's like, oh, okay. And it was like the light came on, you know. So I enjoyed that part of it, that we were not only cooks, but we were part of it too. So,
well, and that's what's cool is I think the biggest benefit that every camper got was the diversity in coaching methods. What I couldn't reach on, Gil could, or Guy could, or you could. I mean, because you're sitting there, and it's funny because people a lot of times when they're talking forget about the cook as far as the conversation
yeah.
goes, right?
Me and Gil, huh? Coaching, and we're yeah. open RC and Chad time.
And they're sitting back
there
going,
I know they're flying on the wall.
Yeah, and Chad's saying, you know, do something different. Yeah. He's telling us, you know, some of
that's
his points
I mean.
As well. So, yeah. Yeah, we look to those are our mentors, man.
But that's what I mean. It's like, you know, they get a chance to observe in a
yes.
different mode
yes.
and
yeah.
to jump in and help
oh,
them.
We were looking over our shoulders at them, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
The whole daggum time,
right.
Like,
you bet.
You guys think about this.
Yeah. and you can watch them in there. They're all going, oh, yeah.
Around looking.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, no, that, screw the cook thing. I mean, that's a benefit. That
oh, don't screw the cook thing.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I was about to say that. It's a benefit that the boys can cook,
yeah.
but having them here in camp and being able for me and Gil to come in and say, this is what we're coaching, what do you guys think about it, and bounce that off of RC and Chav is huge for us.
Absolutely.
Right.
Much.
They've mentored more people than me and I could even, you know,
fathom.
Hold to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's a good thing because they screw menus up the whole time.
Yeah,
it's just like,
well, apparently that was me and Gil.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe was mad because we had the shrimp bowl while he was out. And he found out. He's like, what? I'm going to choke somebody. But we were just kidding. We had pulled pork on the night that he thought we were having shrimp bowl.
So
we had to flip-flop.
So we're out there for 2 days, and we're spiked out. And I think on that second day, I had to eat. I had two of those
granola
fig bars, right?
you knew you was going.
Oh, that eventually.
I had plenty of food. I don't know where you were going.
Somebody was prepared. That's right.
No. For the record, okay? Because every time I'm on the damn podcast, what does he give me gum about?
I'll go hunting. I'm not going to carry nothing. I'm going to hunt with God.
I didn't even carry food, bro.
Hey, if we walk out of camp, his pack is 65 pounds in my
car.
He had a pack. He told me we're going to go out probably for a day and a half. He's in the woods. He takes two sandwiches that Chav and RC make, and he has to cut them in four pieces so he has enough food to get through it. And then who knows what the hell was in that pack.
Yeah. Hey, even coming back empty,
on the record.
Even coming back with a backpack empty,
yeah.
It took him about
45 minutes to go up a hill that was only about 50 feet. And he had two canes, too, and he was, like, going really slow. I got it on video, by the way.
I just want to say, too, I sent Luis to one of my bunny hills. It's what I call the bunny hill. Where you send the beginners.
Y'all don't know.
You send the beginners to go up, and because we had such great elk encounters And I heard the Doros had to stop and wait for you, man.
Yeah, they did. They did. And I was so proud of them, but I was so mad at you.
I was so mad. Hey, another thing that he's not here with us, and I wish he was, but one of the cool things is Manano Gratteron has been able to bring his father to elk camp.
Oh, yeah.
Talk a little bit about that, Manano.
Man, this hunt for me has been a blast. To be able to hunt with my father, it's just... an outstanding hunt for me.
Yeah, and let everybody know your father's from Venezuela.
Yeah, he's from Venezuela.
He don't get to come here all the time. You know?
He's visiting me he's been here for 2 months. I haven't had the conversation whether he's stay or not, but I think he's enjoying the hunt like
100%. We've enjoyed having him, man.
Yeah,
you know what's been cool is the having conversations with. Because of the language barrier, but yet, within the hunting thing, right, we all get it. Yeah, and it's
a universal language. Yeah. So, it's a privilege, and I wanted to thank you all for allowing my father being here with us. So, it's a privilege for me.
You go shake that man's hand in the morning. I love that handshake.
Yeah.
I see him in the morning. I make sure after we introduce, I go shake that hand.
I hadn't met Don Raul personally. And I have to say that he's a special man.
Yeah.
And
we actually have moved you back in the lineup. we brought Raul.
Right. No, he's all the level of respect I have for Manano after this, he is an absolute contender for that number one spot.
Gangster.
This dude put on more miles than I don't care. Anybody in camp.
On a bike?
On a bike?
No. Look at his track.
Yeah, 65 miles in 5 days.
Only one way. With his dad.
Only one day.
Don Raul is the leader of the Venezuela.
Now
Manano is going to be always the lowest ranking man, no matter what.
Actually, that name is solid for the leader, right?
Don Raul.
You better be careful or you're going to have to deal with
Don
the
Raul. Mafia.
Raul.
Like I said, Raul.
He's the Don.
I wanted to add to your comment about the coaching thing. I've been hunting my whole life, and I'm considering myself after 6 or 7 seasons a rookie elk hunter. So being only one season being coach, it's not enough. Take that in consideration that it will take a long time to master this skill. So it's not a big hunt or white tail deer from a tree stand. It's a whole different level. Even my father yesterday made a comment. He has been hunting since he was 20 years old. So he's 71. He had 60 years of experience. So he told me yesterday, he's a rifle hunter. And we were in the range and he told me, hey, this is not a joke hunt. This is a real deal. This is elk hunt. It's with a bow. It's an outstanding hunt. So you have to take that in consideration in order to, flatten the curve, the learning curve. So it'll take some time.
That's great information because a lot of people that come here, they really feel like, well, I'm hunting with the elk bros, right? These guys are going to drag them in by their hair on fire and their butt screaming. You know what I mean? And that's not the case. We don't have control over the animals. We do the best thing we can. We put the miles in. We get in the right positions. And sometimes it just doesn't work out, right?
Well,
these are wild animals that are here. Everything is, God's put them all here and they feed on one another. There's everything here trying to catch them and kill them and including us. And we're the apex predator. They know that. They adjust to our habits as well as, you know, we try to yin when they yang and sometimes we don't zig when they zag. And, it can be, even the most experienced elk hunters we have here, like R.C. Knox, Joe Giglia, I mean, these guys are our mentors, and it's been tough, right? So we all struggle at this at times, right? Are there times where, you know, we knock it out of the park? Yeah, but, I mean, I'm telling you, more often than not, it's been tough.
Well,
everything's against you.
Well, and the thing is, too, when you come here with the Elk Bros, it's not the Elk Bros that are doing it for you. No. They got to do it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I think the whole part of it, I really think four elk, could be in camp. And part of that is developing.
One mule deer.
It's going from the hunter to the killer,
yeah.
Right? And that's that experience level of what to do, when to do, and how to do it. And that takes time. And that's like Manano was saying, it's not learned just right away.
No, it's not.
It's something
developed
that
over time.
It takes some experience.
This is my 14th season. Never felt more comfortable in the calling aspect of it. Still got a lot of work to do on my game. But at the end of the day, the calling aspect of it and the shooting aspect of it, I feel like it's pretty strong. And, you know, with the help of Doc, we'll get this health issues lined out and be back better than ever.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
That's false modesty. there ain't no shit. I mean, there ain't many better callers than this man sitting next to me.
Yeah, I appreciate
you listen
that,
to man. Him in the woods, huh? I mean, you listen to this guy in the woods, and it's, I mean,
which makes me extremely proud. Yeah.
There ain't, you know, there ain't definitely,
because
I ain't bullshit. I'm sorry.
Don Raul, the leader of the Venezuela mafia. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, brother.
When I hear Luis, when I hear Gil, and they're calling from when I first met them to everything, I mean, I can remember the first day I told Luis, I was like, okay, bro, start.
Yeah.
He looked at me and he goes, What?
Yeah.
and
it was by a park.
Yeah.
In the afternoon, we went out just to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And
I was there.
Like when we went to Canada with Manano.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, come on, dude, Manano. Let's do this.
Absolutely.
Let's do this.
Killed
and he was like, I don't want to. Oh, yeah. And finally, he did it. He's been doing enough of it that, and we're like,
So proud of him.
And so it was like the whole way. It's Manano practicing it. It was great. Yeah. I mean, it was good.
Well, as coaches, if we don't get better, we can't get better for our clients that come in that want to be coached. So we've all got to find something within our skill set that we need to get better at. So,
let's go to something like Kev. I'm going to go to you now because I'm going to go from you and I'm going to go to our other guys here that were being coached. Like, for you, you got a chance to hunt with some of us, and I don't know what you were expecting and how much the reality, where that was with what you thought it was going to be like when you came here. As far as the Elk Bros, and, you know, you listened to us for quite a while. I think you've been listening to the podcast for what?
So I've been listening a couple of years. Like I said, I'm not sure what I thought for expectations. I mean, I just like to get out and explore the woods and go hunting. So that's what we've done. So meet new people. I enjoy hearing other people's stories, seeing their techniques. So.
Pleasure to be in camp with you, brother.
So,
yeah, super
guy. So like I said, I don't know if I really had expectations, so to say, other than let's get out there and see some country.
So a lot of people, like, you know, we have our podcast. You know, a lot of people are who they are on the podcast. You had a chance to be around us, so how much did we disturb you?
Well, yeah, and you know, I could have probably been warned that I could have had some, like, Vicks for my nose, but otherwise. But, no, you know, anytime you can get out, enjoy life, so. Never take any day for granted. I mean, that's the main awesome. Thing. You never know when you can't walk anymore, you can't go in the woods. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what you really need to appreciate.
And right. These guys can walk.
Yeah, he can walk. I can tell you that.
Can put the miles in for sure, yeah. Both of them. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, so they can go. Yeah. I mean, they went up the Bunny Hill no problem twice, yeah. You know. Yeah.
And, Bunny Hill.
Yeah, they did. I'm so proud of them for that. Yeah.
So let's go to our campers there. Robert and Cody, I mean, last year when we had guys come in, it was like, this is not what we expected. Where was that with you? What was the reality versus what you thought in your head it was going to be like? Was it better? Was it worse? Where are the points that we need to work at? Where did we excel at? And honestly, that's the type of things that would make us better.
I didn't know what to expect, frankly. It was my first elk hunt, first archery hunt. So very pleased with the camp set up. I wasn't expecting a porta potty, so that was nice. I liked the opportunity to spike camp. I think probably that's the style that I would like enjoy, you know, to get out and get away from everybody and kind of stay out there for a while. So I got a chance to see how that was done, and I think that was good. And then seeing different, you know, calling styles and learning different tips from different coaches has been good. So, and then, you know, meeting, you know, everybody else here has been a good experience as well. So, I mean, I didn't have a lot as far as fixed expectations in my mind, but overall very pleased with the experience.
Awesome.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah. So, really, there wasn't anything that you could say, it's not what I thought it was going to be.
No. I mean, I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish in that I got to see what it was like. I had a pretty good encounter with a big bull.
Bull.
But,
big bull. Big ass bull.
but even that was useful, right? So we saw how the scenarios played out, and this guy came out like just before dark.
Yeah.
I mean, just before
like
dark.
They always do.
Which is a huge point. And I hope everybody's hearing this.
Yeah.
Because how long had y'all been there?
Oh, 2 hours at least.
We left here at, I think, 2:30 that day. Half an hour walk to that spot.
Yeah.
And that was 6:48, I believe, he broke covered.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Just before last light. 6:48.
Yeah, and there's so many people that in a situation like, because you guys were doing scenario stuff,
Very, very lightly.
Uh-huh.
Right? This bull was, I don't know, 200, 250 yards up on the ridge, bedded down somewhere. So we had an idea where he was at. I knew the spot that we were in because of last year, and I kind of knew what I wanted to throw at him. And Bob and I walked through, you know, why we're going to set it. I did something wrong, and I didn't follow the entire plan and didn't fall back. But, man, it got cold. It got windy. And it was sucking.
Well, and that's just it. Like, think about the time. Think about the conditions. The time and the conditions alone, most people wouldn't. I mean, there's
audio.
Everything's quiet. Nothing's happening. After a half hour, a lot of people are like, move it, right?
God, but what clued you into sticking there? You heard him mew a few times, right?
He gave us a real light bedded locate.
Right.
And I mean, quite honestly, I wasn't going to fail Bob.
Right.
Right. If we didn't get a shot, I was going to get that call in. Sure. I wasn't failing Bob. And I think that's one of the things that's important. At least it's important for me to say about our coaches and the whole Elk Grove staff is we don't want to let you guys down. Right. We want to coach you. We want to teach you. We want to give you the knowledge that we have. But when we're out there and we're helping, like, I don't know that anyone wants it more than these guys that are behind you, supporting you, and passing that info down. So I'll get that out of the way. But it was not wanting to fail him. And then understanding that that bull was bedded and we had a legit opportunity. We knew the landscape and I knew he was going to either feed down this way or feed down that way. And he was susceptible to come into that call.
Right.
So it was just setting it out. Right. I mean, that's elk hunting.
A lot of guys wouldn't know that. They couldn't hear it or they wouldn't know that. They just keep pressing on. They never have that encounter by being vigilant.
You know, go back tonight and try it one more time.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be the spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And or they try to push it and go in and, yeah. and blow him and out blow because him. He's got the advantage in the bed.
And we did that day too. When we heard him down in there and I told him, I said, enough of this. I ain't waiting for him. We're going to go in here and kill him. We had an okay wind, and I really thought he was down in there with some cows, and if I could put eyes on him, this guy's a good enough hunter that if he can get eyes on something, he's going to slip in there and kill him, you know? So it's what we tried to do, and he just double-crossed us, man.
Well, that's the other big learning point, too, is just how important the wind is. I mean, it's one thing that says you got to play the wind, but when the wind is, like, going all different directions at 50 miles an hour or whatever.
They got the advantage.
I mean, it's very tough to figure out how to do that properly. And so, you know, understanding how the wind and the terrain works together and how you plan your hunt, and, you know, plan your approach, you know, that's been very useful as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a lot of little subtle nuance points, you know, outside of fitness, archery, and calling that
variables. And that's one thing that people have to understand, like where we are controls a variable. Where me and Kevin and Josh were this morning is a different variable. Because of the type of land and what we're trying to do.
And it's a constantly changing calculus depending on the time of day and what the elk are doing.
The thermals, the way they switch up
and
down.
The wind.
Time of the year,
yep.
Yeah. And what the elk are doing and what, you know, what they're accepting, what they're not accepting, what's pushing the buttons, what's not pushing the buttons. Sometimes you got to just try different things, you know.
Which I think adds to the challenge, which makes it more fun.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we've thrown the kitchen sink at them, man. I mean, it's Guy, myself, you know, Bob, we've thrown the kitchen sink at them and been close, right? But again, this wind seems to, and some lead cows that are, you know, a little smarter than we are, they tend to whip you, you know. So if you stay at it though, man, I really feel like if we're vigilant and we stay at it, anytime we walk in the woods, I feel like we got an opportunity harvesting elk.
And you have to remember, I mean, I've had hunts where you go 7 days without seeing an elk.
Exactly.
7 days. And then,
boom, over
then
the next
something
ridge.
Changes in 30 seconds, zero to hero. Yeah. So, you know, you just got to stay vigilant. You have to stay believing in your ability. You have to keep doing the game plan and try to make that happen. Cody, so for you, you know, from the same thing, man, was it what you expected? Was it different? What parts of it, what did it do for you? And
well, the highlight of it was that warm shower we found out about on the second day.
whoa, there's a shower?
Not here.
Nobody ever told you that? Shower, Bob.
There's a man. So, I'm basically leave.
I am.
We're going to take the bear down there. We're out.
So, other than that, you know,
I guess I missed that in the initial camp briefing.
You know, actually, we missed that in the camp briefing. It was a great surprise for us.
Yeah.
And we realized real quick that you don't make adjustments to it. So.
Man, whoever I took, I said, don't touch this thing, man.
Cody was it outside. KK was outside, butt naked, trying to get it to go. He goes, I think Ed put the drone in the air, and I was butt naked outside trying to get that thing on.
All right. So, but I think all of our meetings ahead of time really establish the expectations of what camp would be and what you guys expected out of us, and what we needed to prepare for. Should we have prepared for some certain things a little bit heavier? Yes, but I think we, you know, like the calling. I think being here and working with the different coaches, like, the one day you were working with me, Joe, talking about how to smile and drop my jaw when I'm doing the cow calls. And I was doing that and I was improving. And the next day I was with Luis and he said, why don't you try bringing the call back farther in your mouth? Because I have a tendency for my call to be up farther. And that improved my call a little bit more. Yeah, so, yeah. Working with the different coaches, I think, was a really important aspect of it. And I had really no expectations as far as how that was going to go.
Right.
I had no clue, really. So, I think that was a big thing that I got out of it. And, the other thing is, you know, how much you can move when it's the right time to move. I was shocked, you know, when that one was coming in and he was 40 yards and he was being blocked, you're like, let's go. And we pretty much ran to get into a better position. And, you know, he may have saw us, he may not have, but I would have, you know, hunting any other animal, yeah, I would have never done something like
and
that.
And we actually got even in position and stopped him with a clear shot at 60 twice, right?
So. Mm-hmm.
If you don't make those moves, they walk out of your life.
Yeah.
And you're right. I think that was.
And I would have never thought to do that because I would have just thought he would have been instantly gone by moving that much.
One of the first times with Luis when we were hunting together, I literally grabbed his pack from behind and moved him.
Mm-hmm. Not to a window.
So you didn't do that. That's what I did. That's what I did with Sean yesterday. I mean, that bull was at 170, 180 yards. And we went full-blown sprint, and I was manhandling the whole way right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, one, we're in line with each other, we're binding cover. I have eyes on him, and Sean's going, do I knock an arrow? And he has an arrow flailing in the air. Do I knock the arrow? He's going, just come on! But it put us in a position, you know, when that bull come up and he stopped, he was at 43 yards, he just didn't give us vitals, you know?
I think a good point from what I heard, and this is really cool, it just hit me, is that I think you guys did do a good job on your diligence on developing your baseline with the calls, which made it so much easier to make small changes when we had you.
Yeah, because you hadn't done nothing. We'd have been
screwed. You should have heard Cody coming back through the field today with his cow calls.
Harden was good.
Didn't sound like a cat?
No. Every time when we were walking through the woods, like every time he'll make the sounds, and I was like, thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up
today,
every time.
Today with Bob as well, when we were up on the ridge, you know, I'd say, all right, give me a couple cow calls, and I'll blend in with you with some cat. You know, we're putting on a little show up there, and man, he was solid, dude.
Yeah.
Really good. Could sound just like a mature cow, and I was really pleased.
I think the coolest thing, like I saw with Cody, was, you know, that's the great thing as coaches, like what you were saying before, is by us being able to give him the examples to see and hear, the next thing I notice is that he's taking my nuances and adding them to his repertoire.
And starts sounding a little like Joe Gillia, like a lot of us do.
It was kind of cool. Like I'd hear his cow calls where he'd be, I mean, he started getting the variance, he started getting the spacing, he started getting the
cadence,
levels.
Yeah.
And then when I started hearing his bugle where he started adding some stuff on the end of it, I was like, I've heard that before.
Yeah.
What's nice about that, you know, Gil being Gil always say, you know, sounds like Joe Gillia. But that's the one thing, right, is you get your own signature on it, right? I hear Luis and I can hear it, right? But it's Luis, and then I hear Gil, and I know it's Gil, right? It's they're singing their own songs to those animals. So you'll develop that, man, and you'll find your niche, and when those elk start coming into that, it'll develop even more. I mean, that's the base, but...
I noticed that, too, in the different callers or the different coaches and how... They call, everyone has their own unique thing, and some call softer, some call louder, and adapting that to the situations.
Now, I want to give Cody props, because, you know, I think Cody has a very unique background where, you know, his hunting knowledge in general is pretty elevated. And, you know, we were having really good conversations with regards to, his knowledge on turkey calling, you know. And he was like, hey, man, I know, you know, every elk hunter hates it when you compare it to turkey calling and blah, blah. But I'm like, I was actually the opposite. I told him, I was like, I think it's great that you're actually bringing that knowledge set into the conversation and trying to compare it, because that association, I think it makes him stronger. So I saw him. We had a really good conversation about setup the first day. The first day I walked out with him in the morning, we talked about getting set up and kind of thinking the different possibilities of what the elk would do, and what if they respond, and what if they respond close versus responding far away. And it was more like me asking him questions, triggering that thought process. And man, he was bam, 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 answering all the questions right. And I mean, in a few minutes, he already had the whole topography evaluated, the wind checked, and where he was going to be set up, right? And then later that day, he told me, it's like, hey man, I think, you know, it's probably a good opportunity to kind of put a scenario together. And we blew a scenario, and the whole wood, you know, the whole woods heard us. I think these guys were way yeah. east of where we were at. And no, I think it was a great conversation as far as sharing ideas as to how you can progress a scenario from, you know, starting out really soft and slowly kind of building up and
to a fever.
Yeah, and it's like I was telling, right, talking about painting the picture in your head and kind of imagining how the elk are interacting while that scenario is taking place, and how the scenario is progressing from potentially just cow calls to now, after a big party and a big really fight, sick. They all left, yeah. And now you got a lost calf in, you know, behind it. So just, you know, having those conversations to me was super unique, because
and that's fun stuff.
It was. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, keeps you occupied during the slow times of the day too. Exactly. You know, and talking through the scenario and then actually doing the scenario, you can't learn that from watching YouTube.
Bob and I did a breeding sequence up there. I wish I would have taped it, because it was solid, man. And I mean, we were from raking the tree to the hot cow to him glunking, chasing her around, displaying, I mean, the whole nine yards. And it was really good. And then he was like, man, to see it and hear it is so different, right? You can, and to try to do it yourself is a whole nother level, right? And I told him, I said, well, this is where we start. You know, we start small and build that interest.
Start painting that picture by layer after layer.
Right. And I've been taught to be a lover before a fighter, and then you know, sometimes you got to throw the baby out with the bathwater and just go fighter straight up, because I mean, at the end of the day, some things aren't working, right? So I've been with Knox, and he's not a huge caller by any, a very good caller, but he uses his woodsmanship and understanding of the elk movement to move in position and kill a lot of elk. But when he's got to go to that call, man, he's lethal with it, you know. And sometimes I've seen him go, well, this ain't working, so let's get that freaking hyper call out and go to work, right? And all of a sudden, here they come, you know. So
Manano, I'd like to have a conversation with your dad, because this was his first experience.
Yeah, he wanted to say some words, so
yeah.
Luis can translate it.
And
¿quieres una palabra?
Ah, bueno, gracias. Bueno, mira, estoy sumamente agradecido.
I'm extremely appreciative.
En primer lugar con Joe.
First place with
la
Joe.
Familia de Elbros.
And Elbros family.
Mi hijo Manano y tú.
My son Manano.
Por haberme dado la oportunidad de esta maravillosa oportunidad
for giving
de disfrutar
this wonderful opportunity
y participar en esta cacería que entiendo muy pocas personas tienen el privilegio de
to be able to participate in this hunt that, as I see it now and understand it, that is a privilege, and very little people has the privilege to enjoy it.
Gracias a todos. No pude conocerlos bien por el idioma, tengo dificultad.
Thank you to everybody. I apologize, I couldn't meet all of you very well because of the language limitations.
Pero que entendía muchas cosas porque el lenguaje de los cazadores es universal.
But I was able to understand a lot of things because the language of the hunters is universal, and I could understand a lot of things because of that. And all hunters, we're all a big family, and I can't thank you enough for everything.
Echo this. Just let him know that the real leader of the Venezuelan
That's
mafia
right.
came to camp.
That's right.
Yeah. The real
que el,
leader.
Que él quiere que sepa que él está muy contento porque el verdadero líder de la Venezuelan mafia está aquí en el campamento.
That's right. Lo que pude.
So let me ask Raul. What were three things that he realized coming okay. out here with us?
¿Cuáles fueron en su opinión las tres cosas que usted de las que de verdad te diste cuenta aquí en este campamento? Por lo menos tres
primero,
cosas. Que,
primero,
que
el profesionalismo y la técnica de ustedes como cazadores.
The first thing, the professionalism and the technique of the team as
la
hunters.
La organización.
And how organized.
La camaradería, el sentirse todos en familia.
The camaraderie and the feeling of a family.
Y por supuesto rodeado de este gran paisaje, este gran país, es bellísimo todo lo que vi.
And obviously surrounded by this incredible scenery and this incredible country. I was blessed with the opportunity to see that the elk, and it's many elk.
22 actually.
22 elk. He probably saw more elk than everybody in camp, which is usually the case.
No podía entender que no podía cazarlo a la distancia, que estaba con un rifle lo mataba todo.
He couldn't. He felt like he couldn't understand why you can, you know, harvest an animal with a rifle. You can just simply yeah. shoot it and then harvest
it. because of a private land. So
yeah,
that's
yeah. He. That for him it was hard to kind of understand all the different boundaries and the stuff that we deal
There's
with.
There's the fence line there. Yeah, yeah, there is power.
Yeah. It's not visible, but it's.
Me provoca agarrar el arco y salir corriendo y chango.
He said he felt like just grabbing the bow and run after them and just shoot them.
Yeah, we felt that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Telling sometimes I feel like You're throwing my bullet.
Gilbert dice que a veces él siente le provoca más bien tirar el arco y todo, tirarle el arco al animal.
So I'm going to say ask you guys the same thing. What were your three biggest takeaways out here in your experiences with the animals and out there in the woods and doing that?
The
three biggest things that are growth things for you guys, probably. I mean, if somebody else said, okay, so you went and had this experience, right? And I'm thinking about it. What would you tell them are probably going to be their biggest takeaways?
I mean, we've already talked about them, Joe, really. I mean, the importance of the calling, especially if you're not guided, if you're a solo hunter or hunting with somebody else, a partner, somebody's got to have some calling skills for sure if you're bow hunting. And then we already talked about, you know, all the different variables like the wind and the topography and how all that plays into your plan and having your plan. Those were the two big ones for me.
What about you, Cole?
The plan, the setup, making sure you're in the right spot. I think that was a big takeaway. The variation and bringing the calls together. It's one thing to learn the call, but can you speak the language? I can't get over how much you can move when it's the right time to move. I just can't get over that.
Really
so
can. Yeah, go back to Cody talking about the setups. That's the other thing too. Is like as you're going through as you're hunting. I mean, you got to constantly be on the lookout for setups and thinking about shooting lanes and different things like that that you don't necessarily have to do when you rifle hunt or hunt from a stand. But you know, trying to find the best position, trying to figure out where the wind's coming from, where the elk potentially are going to come from, and then making sure you're in position with something blocking your backdrop, and then having good shooting lanes associated with that too. You know, you got to constantly be thinking about those things as you're walking through the woods.
It's so dynamic.
It is simply as cleaning the area beneath your feet. So if you do have to move, you don't make big crunches and big pops and sounds, right? So it's just some simple things that a lot of people don't think about. Making a little clearer spot for yourself to make a move if you need to. It's not going to sound like cornflakes when you step on it.
And it's okay to stop and think before you act. And if you don't stop and think,
I mean, you got to think quick, but you still got to stop and think before you make that action, because if you don't think out your scenario before you get over that knoll, you might be in the wrong spot.
I had you and Kev with me, Kevin, and you guys are always asking questions all the time, man. I mean, I really appreciated the questions that as we were going through, you know, picking my brain and why we did this and why, you know, the different things. And Kevin, you did the same thing. So during that time of all that questioning, what were the three biggest takeaways for you?
One thing that was obvious is you're an extremely good caller. You know, I mean, everybody knows that, but it's pretty evident when you get in the woods that you know your way around the call. But, I don't know, I just enjoy learning things, but like Bob and others have said, you know, being proficient with your calls and helping with some of the setups or, you know, potentially where they may or may not bet or why they're traveling here and there, you know, any of those things.
All right, so expand on that, because I think that's critical, because, I mean, we would be in a position, like, we're up high early in the morning, and you're like, okay, so...
So, you know, one of the dilemmas that I still have is, you know, in the morning in the mountains, your thermals are going to be going up, the animals are going up. I mean, sorry, the thermals are going down, but the animals are going up.
Right.
So if you're following right on their tail, you know, if there's a straggler, you're going to get caught. So you want to attempt to parallel them if it's possible. But then when you get up there, you know, at some point when the sun comes out, the thermals are going to switch on you. So you got a limited time, but, you know, things have to be orchestrated well to have it work out because... You know, I mean, there's a reason animals do what they do, because, you know, their whole purpose is to survive.
So there's a big thing that I want to talk about that's hardly ever talked about that we had a big conversation about here at camp. And when we came in on day one, we could hear bugles from a mile away. And then the next day, you know... Me, you, and Josh went to a location that generally when I call there, I can hear bugles all through that drainage there, even across the, you know, across the highway to the other side, I could hear bugles. And yet, we really, that day, even though there were four bulls in that drainage coming up to us, we couldn't hear them until they were probably 200, 250 yards away. And until then, until they got within there, we couldn't hear that. And you guys were having the same experience.
Yeah, right? We had the same conversation that day.
The high pressure came in, and that drives the pressure bars up, so your sound doesn't travel as far. And then the wind came. So when you got wind and all the other noises, I mean, we could literally, when it's quiet, we can literally hear a dog bark for over a mile away. And, I mean, it's like it's in your hip pocket when he barks, right?
And whines.
And whines, yeah. I mean, you can hear him.
Confuses you every time.
And it's like, oh, is that a bull mewing?
Yeah, what was
that? I mean, like, oh, my gosh. So you could actually hear that. But as soon as that high pressure came in on us and these winds came, everything is very suppressed. And to where, I mean, you can hear a bull sometimes 100 yards from him, you know.
Depending on how thick the
forest is. Depending on how thick, yeah. And whether you're above him or below him, I mean, for sure.
And I wanted to bring that up because I think there's a lot of people that things can change. And how many times... I've never thought about barometric pressure.
Yeah.
Well, I've been hunting for 41 seasons.
Luis came in, and he had the same experience as Gil and the same experience as me out with our guys that day. And I updated the weather, and boom, it was almost at 31.
Yeah.
And it was like, here it is, boys. And as soon as I said it, Gil chimed in on it, too. And it was, I mean, we all had the same experience that day. Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, and I want people to hear that because that's something to think about. A lot of times... Because we're not hearing the response.
It doesn't mean that they're not making
it. Doesn't mean that they're not
responding. And the trigger for me was the previous morning, we could all hear each other's bugles.
Oh my gosh.
On
stepping on.
Yeah. Even though we were in different ridges
and over a half mile away.
Some places a mile.
Yeah. And then that morning, it was extremely quiet. And, you know, when we bugled that morning, Cody bugled that morning, it was a loud bugle. And I'm like, Gilbert's texting me and he's saying, not over here. Can you hear anything? I'm like,
because he's above us.
And I said, no. But then I realized Gilbert didn't hear us. And then Gilbert's about to bring the party on, you know. And then he said, I was like, man, made a huge party up here. And I'm like, man, we didn't hear you at all. And so I'm like, I told Cody that day, I said, Cody, there's got to be something with the atmosphere, with the pressure, with the atmospheric pressure that is dampening the sound across the board. It's got to be something like that because it's just strange, the behavioral change, or at least what we thought was the behavioral change from one day to the other. And sure enough, when we came back down to camp and we all had the same experience. And he pulled up the barometric pressure, and it definitely showed it had increased.
It affects them too.
Yeah.
And you equate that with this high pressure with these big blue skies, lots of wind, you know, and it comes right after some storms. In the first couple of days, we had some definite storms, you know. So
I think these are a lot of lessons and the things, and I think people now understand what Elk Rose Adventure Camp is about. And hopefully you've picked up some nuggets from this and talked about, you know, if this is the beginning of their journey, the people that are out there listening to this, there's so much that you can do, but we highly recommend, you know, get with a mentor, actually get there with them. Whether it be, I mean, we have ways of doing things today, you know, where we can do things visually and through audible things like Zoom and stuff like that. But man, to get out in the different types of terrain, to get out and experience those variables, to experience those animals. And I know it's hard for a lot of people back east. It's hard for somebody from Texas. So fellas, what advice would you guys give to end this show to those people that are starting this journey how can they get this type of thing, even if they don't do it with people like us?
Well, number one is, you know, you got to be fit enough to get to where the elk are. Number two, you got to be able to draw your bow and shoot an elk when you see one. And then if you don't have the ability to experience elk camp with elk bros or get some instruction, you know, go with someone that's knowledgeable. Someone that knows how to call, that knows the variables, how to play the wind, and things like that, so you can learn firsthand how to do it.
And number one is, in my opinion, is get out there and do it.
Absolutely. Just do it, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. There, you only have so many years, and you guys did 5 days, right, out of 360. So to get a month's worth of learning, it takes you, 5 years,
yeah,
right, to get a month's worth of learning. So hopefully we've managed to cut that curve out.
Months have about 30.
Yeah.
Not 25.
Yeah, I said about a month. All right.
Just keeping the math.
The engineer.
All from me, not his math.
Yeah, he still thinks we don't understand geometry.
Yeah.
You know, The I don't want to choke up, because I always do when we talk about this shit, he'll start choking up too. But the time that we spend out in the woods and the time we spend in camp, I can speak for every one of us here, and it means the world to us, and we appreciate you guys giving us the opportunity to share our knowledge, to spend time in the woods with you, tromp around, carrying our bows, hiking long hikes. It's a big deal to all of us. So thank you for choosing us to do it. And it was an honor and a pleasure to spend time in camp and in the woods with you guys.
Absolute honor.
I can completely.
I concur.
Yes.
With that, like, you know, if you guys like what we're doing, please subscribe, rate, and review us. You got to go to Apple Podcasts or iTunes, and you can check us out at elkbros.com. Joe, they can get the base camp at elkbros.com. That's www.elkbros.com. You can also check out our adventure series camps that'll be coming up next year. Looking for bigger and better things next year, Joe. This has been awesome. It ain't over yet. Don't let the fat lady sing.
That's right.
No shade towards the big people, because I am one. round is a shape. Right? At the end of the day, man, we We appreciate every one of our hunters in camp, all our coaches. This is our Elk Rose family. I hope you found out that we are, you know, we're just like the next guy. We like having elk camp every week's why we do the podcast.
And our we've also extended our family. We've partnered with Baldy Ridge Outfitters.
That's right.
And the Moots Ranch over there, and we have coaches that are working on private land hunts, and they've been knocking it out of the park while we've been here.
And we're working on that as well.
So, and
they have. They've killed some absolute horses over there. We look forward to seeing what they bring the rest of the year, for sure. I'm looking forward to getting over there and seeing Mr. Baldwin and Ryan and all the guys, Bettis, all the guys here pretty quick. So, but like we say in the Lone Star State, Colonel Bob, husbands, kiss your wives. Wives, kiss your husbands. Hug your babies. Keep your broad head sharp and your powder dry. And we'll see you next week right here on Blue Collar Elk Hunting.
Peace, y'all.
Peace.